It was October 4th, 1923. The American composer George Antheil was set to play a concert of his own music in Paris for an audience including Picasso, Stravinsky, Georges Auric, Darius Milhaud, James Joyce, Eric Satie, Artur Rubinstein, Man Ray, Diaghilev, and Miro, among others. He began to play. Rioting broke out almost immediately. "I remember," wrote Antheil, "Man Ray punching somebody in the nose in the front row." Marcel Duchamp was arguing loudly with somebody else in the second row. In the gallery, the police came in and arrested the surrealists who, liking the music, were punching everybody who objected. "From October 4th, 1923," he wrote, "everybody in Paris knew who I was." Tomorrow night, which happens to be just at the end of George Antheil's centennial year, two of the pieces on that inflammatory program in 1923 are being performed at the Miller Theater. Rioting is not expected. But 100 years after his birth and 41 years after his death, George Antheil's music is still surprising, and the music and his story are still being discovered.
This guy must have been a sensational character.
Charles Amirkanian is a composer who is a leading proponent of Antheil's work.
His early music is very aggressive and dissonant and shocking, and his later music leaves you wondering, where is the original guy?
It was the early work in Paris that earned Antheil his reputation as what he called a bad boy of music.
Paris was perfect for him at that point in his development, and he was perfect for Paris.
Antheil just fit right in.
Paul Lehrman is a composer, author, and music technologist.
His idea of creating tension among the audience was very much in keeping with the other artistic types he was keeping company with. His friends were James Joyce and Pablo Picasso and Eric Satie, and these people were all doing the same thing. They were challenging all the barriers, and they were doing stuff which was guaranteed to enrage a certain portion of the population. And in a place like Paris, this was considered wonderful entertainment.
Antheil had started as a concert pianist, a fairly ferocious one, they say.
And he toured Europe as a concert pianist, and he was a tremendous pianist.
Benjamin Lees is a composer who studied with Antheil in the early 50s.
And I remember once at the Hollywood Bowl during rehearsal when Artur Rubinstein saw George and the two of them embraced, and Rubinstein simply turned with George to this crowd and he said, "This is George Antheil." He says, and when George played the piano, he says, there was blood on the keys.
Soon he was living the bohemian life in a garret over Sylvia Beach's original Shakespeare and Company bookstore on Rue de l'Odéon, writing his own brand of contemporary music. It was in said garret that he wrote his signature piece, Ballet Mécanique, scored for 3 xylophones, 4 bass drums, tom-tom, 2 pianos, siren, 7 bells, 3 airplane propellers, and 16 player pianos. Virgil Thompson later said it was the acme of demented modernism.
Antheil was experimenting, was trying new things, and I don't think he even knew what it was going to sound like or what he was going for. He was throwing kitchen sink stuff into it. There's, you know, quotes from Stravinsky, there's quotes from Rimsky-Korsakov, there's ragtime, there's jazz, there's all sorts of stuff that he just threw into this giant stew pot and then turned up the heat as high as he could. So it's an amazing piece in that there's just so much of it.
Ballet Mécanique was dramatic in 1924 for what Antheil put into it as well as what he left out of it.
He was very prophetic in a lot of ways. He uses silence in a way that no one did again until John Cage, and that there are actually 20 silences in the piece, one of which, depending on the tempo, is as long as 35 seconds, in which absolutely nothing happens. He refers to it as moving time without touching it. And to watch the audience sit through that 35 seconds worth of silence is fantastic. Because, you know, they don't know what to do, and you don't know what to do, and the conductor is more or less beating time or has stopped. I think it's a brilliant experiment in just new vocabularies and new ways of approaching music and the whole concert experience.
Forward-looking, too, was Antheil's sense of the theater of it all. He was well known for having brought out a pistol during a piano performance of his in Budapest when the audience seemed restless.
He turned to the ushers and waved the revolver at him and at the people getting up, you know, who wanted to leave. He says, "Shut the doors. I'll kill the first person who moves." He took the revolver and he put it down on the piano in plain view. And he continued on with his program.
So it's been hard to reconcile that bad boy with the Antheil who later emerged in Hollywood, leading a comfortable life writing film scores like this one he composed for Nicholas Ray's In a Lonely Place, which, with his other film work, supported his concert music, also much tamer than what had gone before. He lived and worked in Hollywood from the late 30s until his death of a heart attack in 1959.
People got so excited about him in the 20s and thought he was, you know, the next great thing, next great composer after Stravinsky.
Pianist Sarah Cahill will perform some of Antheil's music tomorrow night.
And then he never lived up to that ideal. So I think that probably disappointed some people. But he did write some really wonderful music.
He was one of those composers who was outside the mainstream.
Unlike others who had greater reputations, Antheil's genius was very focused.
He pointed the way for people like Cage, Lou Harrison, Frank Zappa. I think that all of these people had to look back at Antheil and say, well, he's already done this, so now we can take this one step further.
And if we are now at a point in the year 2000 where we talk about American music, he was one of the builders of what we now call American music.
George Antheil, composer, writer, provocateur, 100 years after his birth, still underappreciated in America. But we'll always have Paris. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fischko.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.